Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs, penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory, and that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail. I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. Paul Roof, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, as laid up in the heart. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross? I've got two nails in my hand. Father, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, split history in half, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win, because he's on your side and one with God. Always in the majority, so walk with him and talk with him and work with him and stick together and fight together, and with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night and God bless you.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, no, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in, and so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off-grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the Multi-Shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it, and it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200, and it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer, or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know, a bunch of these on a church parking lot, and then just when you need them, you can move them out to wherever you want the person to be using them. Casters are 4-inch casters. Each caster will hold up to 240 pounds, So they'll more than handle the weight for this structure here. Now this structure is 6'5" from the peak to the bottom, 6'5". So and even a tall person can stand upright inside this structure. The door is 1'6" wide and about 5'3" to the peak up there in the door. And the structure is 4 foot wide approximately and about 6 foot long. About 6 foot long by 4 foot wide, 6'5" to the peak. And this is constructed very inexpensively from 2x4 framing, which I'll show you, and uses, I would use 7/16 OSB or plywood. Either one would work for the siding on this. Now, a couple of the features here. I show this with dorm windows. The dorm windows are actually optional. You don't have to put dorm windows. You can just go with a flat roof surface if you want here. I show this with wood shingles, or you could use just plain old tar paper and roofing shingles. Any type of roofing shingles would work on this. Show it with a little flower box there just for effect. And on the backs and the front, I show this with these round windows, like boat-style windows, or you could put square windows. Either one works. I just like the effect of the round windows, the look of those in there. This does have an access panel on the back. Down here is an access panel. We'll just open this up so I can show you. Open up, take this one off. There we go. Now you can see inside the access panel. Underneath the seat and bed is storage, lots of storage underneath here for a propane tank, one of those Port-a-Loo porta-potties, an ice chest over there you can see. Okay, so there's good storage. This is about 18 inches high inside here and about 4 feet wide inside. So the structure, I'll show this with the door open. Let me just hide this door here. With the door open, you can see I've got this set up. Right now I've got it set up for seating. During the day, this would be used for seating purposes. Okay, and I'm going to pull the side roof off here so I can show you inside. That this has a very nice space for a person that maybe is going to school or working, or just the table can be used for eating or whatever. So you've got approximately 6 feet of space on the inside here by 4 feet wide. And this table is actually part of the bed platform, which I'll show you. You just pull the 2x4 out, put it in one of these slots. It's in this 2x4 here. There's another one on the other side. You just drop the 2x4 into the slot, and then you take your bed panel and put it up on top of that, and then that becomes a table. Here you've got 2 foot by 4 foot cushions. There's three of these cushions that become your bed, or you can use a roll-up mattress pad underneath this that becomes your bed. But during the daytime, it becomes seating. It becomes a little mini couch in here, 4 foot wide, and now you've got a space for a student to do their studies, their work, or for having your meal, or if you're working on a hobby or a craft or something like that, you've got this nice little space. When you need to get out the door, you just lift the table up, put it back, put the 2x4 back in the bottom slots, put the table down, and then you turn it into a bed. And I'm going to show you what it looks like as a bed, too. So, good headroom in this. I really like that it's got a very good space. This is an average person, 5'8" tall. You can see you've got lots of headroom here. You've got these nice dormer windows, which would give you lots of light. Lots of light, and also gives you a little bit more headroom up in this area right in here. A 6 foot person could stand up in the middle of this quite comfortably. Two people could actually share, sit side by side on this couch, or you can put in another, you could pull your ice chest cooler out, or someone could put a foldable chair on the other side here. So you could actually have two people sitting side by side or crossways next to each other here. So lots of space in this little place. So let me show you what the framing looks like on this first. And I'll just have to zoom in on this. Now this is all done with 2x4 construction to keep it inexpensive and easy to build. And then I would sheathe it with either 7/16" OSB or plywood. Either one would work. Now it's got a floor frame, as you can see, made of 2x4s down here. Simple 2x4 frame, floor frame construction, and then your casters attach to the corners, not exactly in the corners, but they attach to the floor framing, and the casters have locks on them, so once you move this in place, you can just click on the locks and lock it in place so it won't be rolled around while the person is inside it. Now, this is the bed platform, and it has, this back platform is 2 foot 6 inches wide, and it is permanently connected. These are 1 foot 9 inch wide platforms that can be raised up, and as you can see, these 2x4s right here, you put the 2x4 up in these other slots, and then you put these panels up on top, and they become either a table or a workspace. This one can go up here. This one can go on the end. It can go over the middle. So I gave you lots of options for the ways that you can organize this into workspace or living space as you need to use it. Very simple construction. It takes about 20 2x4s to build this. That's about it. Looking at about under $200 for all the material costs. And you could build one of these in a day. Seriously, you could build the complete unit in about a day. And now I'm going to show you on the inside how this can be used as a bed and also as a small business. So I'm just going to click off this. Okay, now I show this with the bed down, the door open so you can kind of get a peek inside here. Now, this is an uninsulated structure. You really don't need insulation in a small structure like this because the human body puts off about as much heat as a 90-watt light bulb. So in a small structure like this, your own body heat will actually heat it up. And for sleeping, you can either do these pads like this as mattress pads, or you can just get a sleeping bag pad or even an air cushion pad to go underneath it. A sleeping bag pad would work fine because you can roll it up and use it as your seating. And a good heavy-duty sleeping bag would be all you would need in order to sleep very comfortably in here. As long as you don't have the wind blowing on you or the rain drenching you or snow piling up on you, you'll sleep very comfortably in a small structure like this. Your own body heat will heat it up. You could add a heater to these, but it really isn't necessary in these small structures. So I'm going to pull off the side roof, and I'm going to show you how much space this has inside it for a bed. It actually has a very nice bed that will sleep either one or two people. Pull this off here. Just hide this. Now, this has a 4 foot wide by 6 foot long bed. So even an average person can sleep in here. Even a tall person, fairly tall person, can sleep in here comfortably without being cramped. And it's 4 foot wide, so that's a very wide bed that will actually sleep two people. Two people could sleep in this space, all right? And it's 6 foot wide, and it's 4 foot wide and 6 foot long. This person I show in here is about 5 foot 8 inches tall, which is average height for most people. And here you can see the slots I was talking about. These platforms, which I'll show you, I'll take the bed off now. These two platforms are removable with 2x4s underneath them. You just take the 2x4, you put it in the slots that go across here, and then put these platforms up on top to make your table. And you can actually do a table on either end or one in the middle for a desk and table. Now, the ones on the ends I'll show you are used if you want to run a small business out of here, or if you want to organize this in a different way so that if you're cooking, you could put one of these tables on this end or on this end, and you could set up your cooking supplies and you can take care of yourself. You can cook a meal inside this little place right here. So 4 foot wide, 6 foot long bed, and then very adaptable with these platforms of 2x4s. You can just put them up and you can reorganize this any way you want during the daytime for whatever function that you're going to be using. Again, it has storage space underneath the bed and seating. You've got that nice access panel for you got storage underneath there. And I really like the space in here. This would be enough adequate space if in an emergency, let's say that a city has a disaster, a fire like they just had in Canada wipes out all these homes, or you have a tornado tear through a place, or you have flooding or something like that, which we've all seen in the news, happens all the time, and suddenly churches are overrun with people that don't have housing. You know, if you had a bunch of these sitting around that would sleep at least two people, you could pull these out in a small area, you could set these up, and people would at least have shelter for, you know, survival until they can get into houses or shelter, bigger shelters or something like that. So that's another use for this type of structure here. So now I'm going to put the bed back on just to show you. And again, you can see this has really nice dormer windows. So you got really good light in this. And it's got an excellent sleeping space. For it would be better for one person, but it would be adequate for two people. Okay? And, you know, if you got little teeny kids with you, you could put, you know, one adult and a couple of kids in there, too. You know, there's enough space in there to sleep comfortably, and you've got lots and lots of headroom. You're not going to bump your head or anything while you're sleeping. Doorway, 1 foot 6 inches wide, 5 foot 3 inches to the top up here. So lots and lots of good space in this. Now I'm going to show you how this can also be modified to be used as a small business. Okay, one thing I know about people that are homeless is they're also very creative, and you know, a lot of them actually run little businesses in order to support themselves. A lot of them do recycling. They recycle cans and bottles and other stuff like that, or they pick up small appliances and stuff that they may find on the streets, or books or pictures or whatever, and they resell them, and that's how they support themselves. A lot of them are also very crafty people. They may make jewelry, or they may make wood crafts or something like that, or they may be artists. And so they have a way to support themselves, and so I think we ought to encourage that, because that helps them to develop sustainability. Not everybody is equipped to work in the regular workforce. Some people just aren't, but they're very industrious and can support themselves with a small business. And so I thought, well, this shack could also be used for setting up a small business. So what I did is I made this so that the window here can be hinged up, and I'll show this. The window on the one of the dormers, or both, can be hinged up out of the way. And then you've got room here to put a sales counter or little platform here where this person is 5 foot 8 inches tall. A person can stand in this window and they can operate a small business. They can talk to customers, they can take money, whatever, working right out of this small shack. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be for homeless people. If you wanted to run a hot dog or hamburger stand, or sell your crafts or your books, or, you know, whatever you want to do with this, maybe it's a ticket stand, I don't know. This little shack could be very useful for a lot of different purposes. That's why I call it a multi-shack, is because it can be used for many different purposes. But this would be great for a homeless person that has a craft that they make, or recycle products or whatever. They want to sell them. They just hinge up the window, and they set themselves up a little business here to take care of customers. Now, this also shows inside how those tables can be reorganized. Here you can see I've lifted up the bed platform to put a table on this end, another table on this end, and you can use this for cooking in here. You can see I've got a little two-burner propane stove that you can set up on one of the tables up there, so you can do your cooking. You can work on your crafts. This table just lifts off, a 2x4 lifts off if you need to get access to the door. Lots of good headroom, okay? Workspace in there. This can be modified many different ways for many different people of however you want to use it. So a very functional space in there. All right, so that is the multi-shack, all right? And let me just then hide this so you can get a better view of it. Again, can be built very inexpensively, around under $200 on casters, more expensive if you put it on a trailer. And I'm going to provide these plans for free because this is a project that I designed specifically for churches and nonprofit organizations to build shelters. And at present in the U.S., we have about 1.6 million homeless people that just need a simple shelter to live in. Or we have, that's about one out of 200 people. And that's just in the U.S. There's a lot of people in other countries that are in even worse shape. And I really think a project like this would be great for helping the homeless people to have shelter while maintaining their independence and their pride. But it could also be used as disaster relief shelters. You know, we could easily have a major disaster in a city where we have thousands and thousands of people that suddenly are homeless, and we need to provide quick shelter. These would also work for that. It would be big enough space for two people.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately. inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children, because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine, or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
All right. And today, well, it's kind of open mic. We got some daily habits we have to, we're working on, me personally, and I have to get back to my team members. I'm working on a weekly revenue business plan, because essentially we want to expand to, we're in the process, put it that way, of expanding to broadcasting radio-wise. 5 days a week, because it gives us the monetization that we need. But we got to do it 5 days per week. But we've got to have some startup, continued additional capital. We already started. I put up $1,000 startup capital. But we need about $5,000 more. Actually, about, may as well say, let's see, $5,000. Make it $5,550 more to continue to get it right. On that note, actually, you know what? Maybe $6,000, because we need building materials too. But $5,000 goes towards marketing. In any event, so I'll get the people this weekend on that. As it is Friday. UAW, United Auto Workers, they have a strike. I was made aware of this by Del Mar. So I'm going to open up Del Mar's mic here. And Del Mar, are you there?
I'm sorry, I was mic'd myself. Oh, good morning. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay, no problem. Good morning. So, give us what's going on with the UAW, United Auto Workers?
Well, it's just an interesting story of what's happening to our economy and the rich getting richer. Of course, we know that the American automakers, there are four big ones, Ford, General Motors. So anyway, So the union, United Auto Workers, I think about 12,000 members, they've been negotiating for quite some time to get more part of the pie. I mean, everybody knows that the automaker make billions off their deals. And so the CEO of the DD company recently gave himself a 40% raise. Well, if they're making millions as salary, one of the lady interviewed this morning, she gets $30 million. So you know what kind of money that is. So they asked for a 40% increase of their hourly wages or period of time. And so they negotiated for several months, and the corporation, the four big makers, said no. They offered them a 20% increase instead of 40. And so the union agreed to strike, and so they left last night at midnight, strategic strike in certain places. And, of course, the economy tax president got involved. He negotiated. He talked with the president of the union and the president of the corporations, and they couldn't come to no agreement. So the people walked out. And, of course, it's predicted that that's going to have an economic effect on the whole country. It's going to have a ripple effect, a domino. So if they don't get something fixed here soon, we're going to have maybe a holiday like pandemics. We don't know. But anyway, it's big. Been several years since they had a strike on this level of coverage. So that's what's big happening for the economy. And we're going to begin to see that effect here just a matter of time. That's my input of that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking. Well, first thing, I'm no expert or authority on what's happening up there with the union in Detroit, but I know this. Union labor is expensive. And we're going through what I would call the age of disruption. Because now, you know, with apps on the phone, you know, you don't have to go shopping, because a lot of shopping malls have gone out of business. Not all of them, but quite a few. So, you know, instead of going shopping, you can get from anything from a sandwich to furniture to, weight sets, safes, traveling equipment, hobby equipment, waffle makers. I mean, I see an Amazon truck zip through this neighborhood 7 days a week. So, and that's a disruption. You don't have to have a car these days. There's Uber. I mean, you don't have to have a car these days. You don't have to even get a taxi. You can do Uber and Lyft. So, now, with that said, you can go on YouTube. There's several videos of people that are, they built their own tiny houses. And then you also have people building their own cars. Now, matter of fact, I'm on Amazon right now. I'm trying to get the keywords for you guys. And I'm not talking about a model car, but let me see. You can order car kits. I'm trying to get the correct car kit. Car kits for vehicles. Let's see what this comes up with. But, all right, I was a member of an EV club. That means electric vehicle. And these are guys who built their own cars. So this isn't new. A lot of these EV clubs have been around for over 20 or 30 years. So I'm trying to find something here. DIY, and you guys can help me, DIY. Auto kit. Let's see what comes back. I think what's going to happen is this. It's happening already. or a DIY car kit on Amazon. No, that's not what I'm looking for. Let's see. Typing in any search engine, build your own car. Okay, let's see. Build your Nissan today. Build your own Nissan. Well, let's go with here, Nissan USA. Okay, Nissan Sentra, build and price. Okay, oh, that's not quite what I was looking for. I'm not talking about what you can piece together online. Build your own car.
How about the word symbol? How about a symbol? The word symbol.
Right. All right, excellent. Assemble your own car. Because that's what the big three did. All right, Factory 5 Racing, build your own car, Roadster. Is it possible to build your own car? Building a custom car can definitely be done if you spend some time learning how to tune. All right, let's see. Is it cheaper to build your own car unless you have all the major parts already in tech, such as the engine, transmission, drive lines, and cooling system? You will be out of a lot more money putting the car together out of scrap metal than you will be buying one. All right, that's one person's opinion. Are kit cars road legal? Remember, if you ever want to drive a kit car without legal entanglements, you need to get the title, registration, and insurance similar to what you need from a mass-produced car. All right, assembled car, all right, that led us to kit car, so let's go with that keyword, kit. Kit car. All right, Mini Coopers. Order a kit. All right, let's see. Oh, wait a minute. Let's go to Wikipedia. All right, the keyword here, thanks to Delmar with assembly, kit car, K-I-T car, two words. A kit car is an automobile available as a set of parts that a manufacturer sells and the buyer then assembles into a functioning car. Usually, many of the major mechanical systems, such as the engine and transmission, are sourced from donor vehicles or purchased new from other vendors. Kits vary in completeness, consisting of little as a book of plans, or as much as a complete set with all components to assemble to fully operational vehicles, such as those from Caterham. That's a car, I guess. A company. Hold, let's look that up. All right, look, kit car manufacturers. They have in Argentina, Australia, Austria, Belgium, Estonia, Germany. They're global. Let's see here in the U.S. United Kingdom. United States, a glider kit. Bakley Auto Works, Bradley Automotive. Excuse me, Classic Motor Carriages, DDR Motorsport, Devon Enterprises. There are plenty of them right here in the United States. Okay, the key word, and thank you, Lelmar, so much. People are assembling kit cars. So I'm just taking a a wild, uneducated guess that with the all big three now. Now, granted, the lion's share of people out here, the American car buying public, they're not going to jump on the bandwagon, in my opinion, and learn how to build their own cars. But I believe there will be a significant amount that do just like they're doing with the tiny house movement. The tiny house people, some people buy their tiny houses. But a good majority of them, I don't know what the statistics are. They go to YouTube. Well, we've had them on here. Ansel Troy, young black man out of Oakland, California. Oh, now he bought his tiny houses though. But there are quite a few that build them. Oh, matter of fact, but now Ansel knows how to build his own. He knows how to build his own now. Let me see. Since Kit Car, I want to say Kit House. Is there a Wikipedia page on that? Kit Homes. Or they probably... Kit House, House Kits. Yeah, Mighty Small Homes. Zip Kit Homes. Let me put it that way, Kit Homes. And places like Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, Ace Hardware, and your typical mom and pop hardware stores, the ones that have left, that are still standing. A lot of do-it-yourselfers go in there. A lot of do-it-yourselfers build their own roofs, repair their own roofs, fences, sheds. I don't know what the percentage is, but you have a significant, you have enough to sustain Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, Ace Hardware stores, and the regular mom and pop hardware stores. We do have quite a few do-it-yourselfers in the United States. Track Auto. Do-it-yourselfers go to Track Auto. They change their brakes. They change their tires. Some of them know how to, you know, do engine work. So, you know, it'll be interesting how this strike works. Because, like I say, you do have people that the vast majority of the American public, particularly in Western countries, they don't want to learn how to do it yourself. They want something turnkey. So there's enough out here for everybody. That's how I'm looking at it. But how this strike's going to turn out, be interesting. Delmar, any thoughts on, because there are plenty of car kit companies where you can buy the kit and assemble it yourself.
I think you use a key word. We're living in a time when people are adapting and change the thing that they never would have thought about. But now it's simple because the technology has changed everything pretty much now down to a blueprint. And by this artificial intelligence, AI, who knows what they're going to start doing that they never thought of doing before. Because it's simpler now than it used to be.
That's true.
Create a whole different spur of innovation that, again, is out there, and you'll see after T-Rail, they have a choice now.
Right. Well, like I said, I was a member of an EV club before, which means electric vehicle, before, you know, Tesla and all these companies were out there, you know, branded like they are now. And a lot of those club members, and it was a small club. We had probably maybe 25, 30 people at best that would show up on a monthly basis. And a lot of those guys, you know, they were driving EV. They've been driving electric vehicles that they built themselves for, you know, 20 plus, 30 years easy. And a lot of them will essentially go to the junkyard and find a car that's not too far gone. And they would buy the ones that had not the automatic transmission, but the most likely the manual transmission, stick shift. And they would buy those bodies, or the chassis, I guess you would call it, on the cheap. And they, you know, that was their weekend project. Now I hadn't done that, but you do have a number of those, you know, and that was just for electric vehicles. You know, people that were interested in that. One guy I met in there, he has his own bike shop. Where he would take just a regular bike and convert it into an electric bike. They did some, but he had a whole sustainable business with employees. And, man, it's, I don't know how long he's had it, but I've known him for at least 15 years myself. So, interesting. But the big three, and I imagine...
Four.
All right, hold on. You got Ford, Chrysler, GM, General Motors, and let's see, Ford, General Motors.
I forget what they call it. There's four.
All right, hold on. Ford, Chrysler, General Motors, GM. Let me look on my phone. That's the easiest way to do it. I know that because Daimler and Chrysler is one company, unless they merged or did something right.
Well, they changed their name now.
Okay.
Jeep and Chrysler are coming together.
All right, we know Ford and Solo. Okay, let's see. Oh, man, let's see. Because I'm so used to seeing the big three. Okay. All right, hold on. Let me go to matter of fact, let me go to that U.S. UAW, and Priyanka will be coming to you soon. Let's see. Strike. Okay, UA, this is the AP News. UA workers strike at all, well, now, according to AP, all three Detroit automakers in a battle for bigger share of industry profits. So the Associated Press says about 13,000 U.S. auto workers stopped making vehicles and went on strike Friday after their leaders couldn't bridge a gap between union demands and contract talks and what the Detroit three automakers are willing to pay. Members of the United Auto Workers Union began picketing at the General Motors Assembly Plant in Wentz, Missouri, a Ford factory in Wayne, Michigan, and near Detroit, and then the Lantis Jeep plant in Toledo, Ohio. Okay, the strikes will likely chart the future of the union and American homegrown auto industry. That's, you know, interesting because, you know, I'm thinking like Walmart, you know, they're replacing them, this do-it-yourself checkout, the do-it-yourself checkout at Walmart is growing, and you're not going to unionize a machine or a consumer. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. Let me go to the other phone line here. 314 area code. Your mic is open.
Hello, L.A. It's a long time since I had the opportunity.
Yeah, good to hear you, Robin. Robin asked about you. Robin asked you about you last week. She's probably listening right now, but she's on a bus.
No, but you know, you talk about kick cards. Those were very popular. But you know what one of the deterrents to that is that young people are not given those type of, introduced to those type of skills and not taken through the process of assessment to see whether or not they have an inner ability for mechanical skills.
True.
And that's one reason why come we have a young child. If you got a two-car garage, you should turn half of that garage into everything from woodworking, metalworks, chemistry, electricity, building this, building that, you know, plants, gardening. Because when I was coming up, we had hands-on experiences, especially in school. I went to a trade school, and I knew several people that was building kid cars. You know, the old, looked like a Duesenberg, are those Packards? Well, they had kit cars that would replicate of those two vehicles. They used to use Volkswagen engines. Heck, we used to even build gyrocopters. You know, the FAA classified them as experimental, so you didn't have to have a license. But I knew people that had gyrocopters. Well, they put Volkswagen engines on them and flew around the air. And they got planes today. They got one plane today. You know, you can even put your own airplane together, but they got some models like the Sling. You have to have, you can do so much work for yourself, then you have to have someone to come in that's licensed to come in and inspect your work up to that point. Then you can proceed further on. And overall, it's cheaper.
Well,
and gives you the hands-on experience.
Well, the strike just started today, I guess. So what do you think, I guess they'll eventually come to a middle ground, and I can't imagine the strike being forever.
Well, you know, a lot of United Auto Workers used to be much, much bigger. They used to be in the millions at one point in time. And automation had taken the job, the task that many humans used to be. I myself think that the municipalities and government should tax those robots as if they was human beings, where they would pay an employee tax. That
Ooh,
way
that's
communities
strict,
would
man.
Not be communities would not be void of those taxes that they will receive in order to make improvements to the infrastructure and other community needs. You know, even Social Security tax, you can tax a robot. Artificial intelligence that have taken the place of humans, even some software. So they should tax those, and then all they would keep the revenue continuous, and you wouldn't have.
Well, they tax those. Those companies are
going to.
Those companies going to move out of that. They'll move out of that jurisdiction.
No, they wouldn't.
That's
move.
What's going to happen.
You going to pay employee tax. Wherever you go, it also will be at the federal level too, Social Security. Because what you're doing, you got people that still are dependent on those services, and you got people that no longer have employment where they can pay for those services that's needed. So tax, and the company is not losing anything. Of course, they're paying the tax. But that's about it. They're not paying the wages, right?
Well,
you don't pay
all
no
right,
wages.
Let's say you
Once
tax
you
them. Actually, you would still save money because you don't have to worry about sick leave, people calling in, people, employees complaining. So there's a whole, they would still save money under the way you're saying.
Wages and taxes, wages
is a cost of doing business.
Right, it is.
And you got the employee side of the tax, and you got the employer side of the tax. So the employer should continue to pay their side of the tax. And we, you know, that's easy to figure out what that is. Because communities need those taxes in order to continue providing the services that they do in order to operate the community. You got fire, you got fire service, you got the police, you got your schools. You got to maintain your infrastructure for water, sewage.
Yeah, yeah, so, no, your larger cities.
Yeah.
Your larger
now,
cities
part,
like New York,
Chicago. Once you pay for that robot, you can work him 24/7. You don't have to pay no wages, no salary.
Yeah. No wages, no hospitalization, no retirement, none of that.
Absolutely. You don't have to pay any of that.
Yeah.
So you're still coming out ahead. As
there
far as CEO making the money that they make, the membership votes those CEO into those positions. And CEOs are very valuable because they bring more than their everyday function. They bring a vast amount of networking that can be utilized in order to make sure that that organization remains very powerful.
Yeah, those CEOs earn it.
Yeah, another thing, when you start talking about your automobile industry, the automobile industry gets into a national security issue. Because if you look back into the past, it was the tooling over of automobile industries, in particular Chrysler, that made it possible for this country to begin the tool up for its war industry, war need industry. And that was one of the things that helped the United States to prevail during especially World War II.
Okay. Robin is on a city bus going headed to Tacoma. She, I guess she says hello to you, Bianca. She asked about you last week. So she's on the bus right now listening to you.
Yeah, hello to Robin also. I miss hearing her enthusiastic and critical thinking voice.
She's on here. Well, actually, she's listening now because, like, she's on that.
So I hope an impasse will come in the negotiations. I think it's well needed. I don't know what Joe Biden is talking. See, federal government has no damn business setting a minimum or a maximum wage. Federal government is in areas where it needs not be. It's going to take something like an Article 5 convention of a state, which I'm part of, in order to reel them back in where they should be. Federal government needs to have do away with the overreach that it has. It's the owning of land never was intended for it to own land. You know, in areas where states where you have extraction of natural resources, that should be state controlled. Federal government shouldn't have nothing to do with that. And when you look at some projects like up in Alaska with the Willow Project, where the Biden administration will be charging companies that do exploration and extraction as much as $11 billion in fees and licensing fees, that money should go to the state of Alaska. You know, Alaska has the highest per capita expenditure for its public schools. And it's because that the people take part in the windfall amounts that is paid from the exploration and extraction of oil in that country.
Okay.
And then you have states like Texas, you have states like Louisiana and other seacoast states where you have that type of activity going on. Well, those fees should not be going to the federal government where
their usage of it goes to things like contributing or giving away to Ukraine. No, that should go to those states. And it would take a lot of burden off the back of taxpayers in those states. People would be able to keep more money in their pocket and more things toward moving on into the future can be provided for the citizens of those states and also elsewhere.
Right.
There should be term limits. Term limits not only on elected officials, but also on bureaucrats. Bureaucrats amount to over, I guess, 250,000 in this country, and many of those positions come from the recommendation of elected officials themselves. No, both should be limited to the amount of time that they can remain where they presently are. So that's my opinion on that.
Sure,
I think the UAW will meet an impasse. And, you know, if inflation wasn't as high as it is, and you get the inflation because the federal government prints money, if inflation wasn't as high as it is, then people would probably be able to keep more money in their pocket and wouldn't be subjected to this urge to demand higher pay. 40% and so on and so on and so on. All that's going to be passed on to the consumer.
Yeah, that's true. Inflation's kicking everybody in the butt. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people in the butt.
Yeah, that's
around the globe.
Well, you have,
yeah, you're right.
Well, you have an excess of dollars floating around where naturally merchants and that is going to raise their price. Because
well,
they figure that people
are
going to spend it. They got it to spend, they'll spend it. So they raise the price. Now, what happens? You got people that's marginal for whatever reason, in many cases because of the lack of education and skill attainment in the areas where it's in need. Well, then they're going to fall short, as usual. And it gets back to the old key concern that if you want to be able to get out of the present dismal economic position, then you're going to have to prepare yourself, prepare your children for the economic challenges that exist and meet the demands that the economics call for. So they pay well. And, you know, getting back to Kit Homes, hey, you got Kit Homes, right? They got Kit Homes. You can...
They have Kit Homes. They have, well, they have more and more people. Like I said, Kit Cars have been around for a while. But I think, well, particularly with this age of, you know, social media.
Yeah.
But the majority of people still, most people still, Kit Home or Kit Cars, still most people, the buying public, most people, in my opinion, they still want a turnkey situation. They're not interested in building their own Rolls Royce or Volkswagen, nothing like that. Just go to the dealer. And some people like that experience. Some people love the dealer. I mean, the experience you get by shopping for a new car. And then, you know, and, you know, all right, sign me over. What's my credit score? And give me the keys. So they don't want it. This.
Well, one of the reasons why
the DIY crowd
skills
is not big. True, you're right.
Yeah,
a lot of people do not have those skills.
Yeah, and you know,
right.
You're talking about building your own car. You're absolutely right. You can go online and order your car and put all the pieces and the bells and whistles that you desire in your order. And not here in the United States yet, but in European countries, especially at BMW, you walk into a lobby and give the clerk your information for you to pick up your car, and your car, your vehicle may be on the fifth floor, and robots, and through artificial intelligence, your car will start up, drive over, get on the elevator, come down, get off the elevator and pull up to where you can get in and drive off.
Right.
So that's cool.
Well, If you know anybody who's, and I, you know, I'm going to get some people on here that have actually built cars. But there's definitely a, or like say your auto parts place, you know, they might, a lot, most people that go into your auto parts places, they probably might not know how to build a car. I'm sure the overwhelming people that go into Track Auto or AutoZone or, I don't know what some of the big national ones are. Pep Boys is like in the D.C. area. But or do it yourself as well.
Yeah, a lot of them, you know, places do the same. Hushmo down there in Memphis, he's redoing a 1994, I think it is, Corvette Stingray.
Well,
so, yeah, that goes on.
Right. All right, well, thank you for your contribution on that. Delmar, any other comments on the UAW or the DIY movement? Delmar might be muted up or doing something else again. So, all right, people. Well, oh, Delmar, are you there? Okay, I guess he's not. All right, well, what time is it? It's 11:51. So I'm going to shut it down for today because I'm working on but you know what? Before I shut it down, I'm going to play Adam Clayton Powell again. We're going to go out on that because what's in your hands? Okay. What's in your hands? You know, there are cars out here. You can build a car that runs off of solar energy. There's solar cars out here.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butts and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day.
And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory, and that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail. I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. Paul wrote, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. And the course has laid up for you. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross. I've got two nails in my hand. Father, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, split history in half, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win because he's on your side and one with God, always in the majority. So walk with him and talk with him and work with him and speak together and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night and God bless you.